Welcome to A Cult of Personality, esoteric podcast extraordinaire at occultofpersonality.net. I'm your host, Greg Kaminsky. A Cult of Personality podcast is available on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher Radio, Acast, and all the best podcast apps. This is episode 172, featuring an interview with Michael Burdio, created in collaboration with our friends at Black Lotus Cult. A Cult of Personality podcast is made possible by you, the listeners, and by the subscribers to the A Cult of Personality membership section, and our patrons who participate via the A Cult of Personality Patreon campaign. I'd like to remind you that although you're able to listen to this podcast at no charge, the costs for me to bring it to you are significant. Your financial contributions make sure this free podcast continues. Please support A Cult of Personality podcast by joining the membership section or donating via the donate button on the occultofpersonality.net website or via Patreon at patreon.com/occultofpersonality. Our Patreon page now features an exclusive RSS feed for patrons, meaning that if you subscribe via Patreon to support the show, you will get some content just for you. And if you're already supporting the show or have done so in the past, my heartfelt thanks, and I salute you. A Cult of Personality podcast is also sponsored by Miskatonic Books, an online store that focuses on the esoteric, occult, ceremonial magic, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, witchcraft, the Golden Dawn, as well as dark fantasy, classic horror, and supernatural fiction. They carry books by all your favorite esoteric publishers as well. Just visit miskatonicbooks.com. Temple of Thelema is a true outer order of the greater mysteries, providing ceremonial initiation, structured training, and regular group work, all in conformity with the principles of the Book of the Law. An investment of time, effort, and commitment is expected from each member. Each is expected to aspire fervently to the great work, to dare with courage undaunted, to perfect that work, and ever to apply his or her best effort to effect harmony within the order and within the world in general. Founded in service to the AA, College of Thelema seeks to guide the student to an understanding of the Law of Thelema. Most especially, this means a deeper understanding of oneself and of one's true will. A combination of instruction techniques is employed, including seminars, written texts, and individual work. For over 40 years, College of Thelema has published journals in The Continuum and Black Pearl, as well as several books on occult subjects, maintaining high standards in Thelemic education. Visit Temple of Thelema at www.thelema.org. Now, in episode number 172, an interview with the one and only Michael Burdio. For more information about him and his current book, Ontological Graffiti, go to fulgur.co.uk/artists-and-writers/Michael-Burdio. Michael Burdio, author of the famed Voodoo Gnostic Workbook and Hierophant, of the Vudan Gnostic current, is a rare visionary in modern occult studies. Raised in a liberal theosophical household, he was drawn to the esoteric and spiritual approach to religion and being from early on. After studying philosophy in New Orleans and having been ordained as a deacon in the Anglican Church, Berdio was sent to Haiti in 1963, where he taught philosophy and was in charge of the local Anglican Museum. It was on the Magic Island that Berdio met his Spiritus Rector, Dr. Jean Main, who initiated him into the secrets of the Vudan Gnosis. His close collaboration with Jean Main, first in Haiti, and then later in Chicago, lasted until the Vudan Master's death in the early 1980s. Berdio stands unique in the spiritual world. His system of occultism and gnosis is unlike any other. Instead of reworking the occult past and clinging to classical theories, he works mainly on Gnostic radionic lines and esoteric creativity. Deeply rooted and based in the magical world and traditions of esoteric Vudan, Berdio has managed to introduce a great number of other spiritual currents into his system, to unite areas so seemingly apart as German idealism and theosophy, to Shinto and Bonpo. Berdio has spun a metaphysical web, connecting and bringing them into occult harmony through the threads of esoteric Vudan. To aid in this metamorphosis, Berdio also stresses the creative aspects of magic and gnosis. In addition to being a writer and philosopher, he has produced many evocative works of art, including paintings that have been used as magical instruments and gateways to the spirit world. He has not only greatly influenced contemporary occult circles and individuals, such as Kenneth Grant of the Typhonian OTO, the Chaos Magic scene, and Gnostic circles, but also musicians and artists. I'm proud to bring you this interview that was created in collaboration with our friends at Black Lotus Cult, who did all the heavy lifting. You can find Black Lotus Cult online at blacklotuscult.com. They've also created a unique new video series featuring Michael Berdio, and you can find links to those videos in the show notes as well.
Good evening. On behalf of the Occult of Personality show, we have the pleasure today of speaking with Michael Berdio. Michael was well known in Gnostic Vudan and Theosophical circles in the 1960s and 70s. In the 70s, Kenneth Grant began publishing his Typhonian trilogies, which perhaps opened Michael's work up to a whole new audience, and also showed people some of his artwork, which was very important to his spiritual practices. In the 80s, his Vudan Gnostic workbook came out, and his recent publishing has been taken over by Folger Esoterica. And we are on the eve of his latest work, Ontological Graffiti, being released. So we were going to talk to him today about his writings and art. Good evening, Michael. How is the view from your art studio high above Chicago?
Well, I guess everything is going along fine. It's a cloudy day, but we've had a fall-like summer, so everybody is adjusted to it. But they're beautiful little white flicks of color on the beautiful lake from the sails of the ships. People are going out, getting ready for the weekend of sailing their boats and connecting with the water elementals.
I always tell people you have the best view of Chicago, particularly when the sun is coming up over the lake.
Well, of course, it's very impressive. Certainly, it's something that I really didn't know I would ever have until I moved here.
Excellent.
All my life I've lived with a view of water, though. when I was in Canada, when I was in at home in Seattle, I always looked out the water, out the window and saw beautiful water elementals. Of course, being a child of the moon in Cancer, I really have an affinity to the element of water, which sometimes comes out in my choice of colors and artwork.
Very good, very good. Well, the first book that we were going to speak about is, of course, the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook. Kind of a curious beginning to that book, something that you had told me. It was put together essentially after a failed attempt at a lecture that you had gone all the way to New York for. Could you tell the listeners a little bit about how that workbook came together?
Well, in the 70s, Mark Lowley and I gave a number of seminars at the Midland Hotel here in downtown Chicago, maybe about 4 to 5 a year, sometimes timed with the season, sometimes just whenever we felt the energy needed it. And after 1978, we ceased those. And Mark went on to his own career, and I started rewriting some papers and also bringing out a whole new series of what we might call advanced lessons in the Monastery of the Seven Rays continuum. Through the 80s, this continued. And towards about 1985, I was told, or asked, shall we say, if I would be interested in giving a seminar in New York by some of the Haitians that are mentioned in the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook, especially Luc Gazzard, who was a friend of Dr. Louis Martello. Leo Louis Martello was one of the major voices of Wicca there in the Big Apple, as they say. And I said, well, I think I might be. And gradually, Herman Slater, who was running the Warlock Shop and had his bookstore and also a school attached there in New York, in Lower Manhattan, I might add, in the Village, although it originally was in Brooklyn, I believe, and moved to Lower Manhattan. Anyway, he contacted me and asked me if I'd be interested, and I said, well, possibly. But anyway, I said, I will talk about some of the courses I've been writing. And so he said that would be very agreeable. Well, up to the time of maybe about a couple of weeks from before the time when I was supposed to go to New York, he called, and it seemed that maybe not too many people in the community, the neo-pagan and Wiccan community, were really too interested in my presentation or approach or coming out at that time for a seminar. And especially some of the topics seemed to be a little more cerebral than what they were used to with their own, what we might call hands-on Wiccan practice. So he said, well, we'll wait and see. Until about a week before, I had a dream where one of my occult teachers advised me not to go to New York and that I should be prepared for the event of the seminar I was to give not happening because of lack of registration. And it was my understanding that there were various groups sort of pushing for it and others pushing away from it. And so Herman called me maybe about 4 days before I was supposed to fly out. and he discussed the situation, and I said, well, that's fine, why don't we just cancel it and have it some other time? And he said, okay, I'll get back to you. Then he called me a day later, and he said, I've given it so much thought, I would like to publish a book. Now, the seminar was to be called The Voodoo Gnosis, and he said, why don't we publish your book as a Voodoo Gnosis workbook, or the Voodoo Gnostic workbook? And I said, well, that's agreeable, so I'll just send you copies of all the material, and you can edit and arrange it. I'll give you a sequence in which it was written, and you can go ahead and bring it together. And it would start out with the Lucky Hoodoo course, which I wrote about 1977 for private students of the Monastery of the Seven Rays who were interested more in voodoo than they had been exposed to, and had a, shall we say, a sympathy towards the American form of voodoo, or the Southern hoodoo. Okay, so that worked out, and so the Voodoo Gnostic workbook emerged, and it became a kind of underground encyclopedia, and I might add a kind of a spiritualist voodoo book. Certain schools used it, certain others just avoided it, apparently. And some Wiccans and the voodooists mentioned it in their bibliographies, because they always look in there. And, for example, Margot Adler included it in later editions of her Drawing Down the Moon, and Sally Glassman had her in her wonderful book on voodoo and witchcraft with her really marvelous art in it. So I decided that this was the way it was to be diffused, and I had, as I said, there were all these papers, and they all went up there, and they were published. And what was interesting is that I don't know how many printings they had, but anyway, the first one was sold out quite fast. And then later, maybe two or three years later, a pirated edition came out in the Southwest, put out by a company that specialized in radionics. And some friends of mine saw it at a radionics convention in the suburbs, and bought the two volumes and gave them to me, and I immediately contacted Courtney Willis, who was in charge of the business administration of the Gnostic movement that I was to which I was connected, and he immediately got the lawyers after them for stealing one of my properties, and of course denying my copyright. Well, of course, that was settled, but then later, Weiser brought out a second edition, which was in some ways a little more, shall we say, professionally produced, because, of course, Weiser had more facilities to bring to bear on the publication. And it had a long introduction by Courtney talking about the organization. Well, the organization was basically grounded in the Hyde Park study group that we had, which was an actual spiritualist voodoo society, but meeting informally, more like an inquirer's organization at first. And from that, the material came for the publication of the book Ontological Graffiti. But the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook is still available, and it's used as a reference book and a textbook by various groups, because I still get communications. And another thing that was kind of interesting, in some of the chapters at the end, I say, send the report to Michael Berdio at Post Office Box 1554, Chicago, Illinois 60690. And the people that bootlegged my book with two bonuses, taking my name off the cover or on the front page, forgot about that, or else probably weren't even aware of it. And so people were still writing to me who had purchased the bootlegged edition, which I found rather humorous. It just shows that even, shall we say, crime needs better editing. But anyway, the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook is still being sold, and new editions I'm asked to sign from individuals who come often to the occult bookstore here in Chicago, where I meet with a group for our film society. So it's still carrying its weight as it should, since it's quite a large book. But I might say that everything in it is basically what we've been doing for the past 30 to 40 years, and especially the chapter on the voodoo energies, the psychological or the depth psychological impact of the papers in the what we call research readings. That's still a very, very important part of my work, and I consider it in a condition where I would never want to edit it. I would only want to add or amplify it with case studies if I ever had to rewrite it, you know. But it's a wonderful book, and I myself constantly refer to it, because at the period in which we are talking about, it more or less defined concepts that had never been defined before. And I found it to be personally very helpful to have it in existence. But it certainly had a wide, wide diffusion. And it's actually something that many members of the Wiccan and Neo-Pagan and Gnostic continua, shall we say, benefit from simply by its existence. So I think it came into existence really as a result of a failure registration on the part of proposed students, but I think it's lasted longer than maybe the memory of some of those old tapes.
Well, the discussion groups that we created on Facebook, every single week there's an artist somewhere in the world who posts a piece of art that is inspired from reading the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook. So it is grow many trees to this day.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that I learned from my association with individuals who are quite connected to art and to Wiccan and Earth religions, especially Lady Olivia, to whom the ontological graffiti is being dedicated, the association between occult energies and art is extremely strong and should be explored whenever it surfaces. And there are so many different opportunities to create things after reading, let's say, parts of a paragraph, even in the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook. I consider it very, very much a stimulus for even my own personal art. Now I find benefits from a tremendous number of benefits from connections with parts of the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook.
Well, you'd mentioned some of your older papers and some of the work that you published in the 60s and 70s. So one of those works was Cosmic Meditation, which brings us into modern times, your relationship with Folger, who had a pretty stunning edition of that. A lot of people picked it up. In fact, it sold out through the publisher. And there's a very large difference. It showed people a different style, much more lucid than certain passages in the Voodoo Gnostic Workbook. and very cohesive. What are your thoughts on that work now?
Well, I think, first of all, that the edition that Folger brought out was perhaps the best thing for that for the period of its, shall we say, breakthrough. Originally, it was a sequel to Lucky Hoodoo, and it was called The Perfect Medium. It was published by Mark Lully at the Absolute Science Institute School, just like the Lucky Hoodoo was initially published in 1977, I would say, by the Associates of Haitian Occult Sciences, which was another branch of the Absolute Science Institute. Excuse me. But the Lucky Hoodoo and the Cosmic Meditation, when it came out originally as The Perfect Medium, it actually presented a softer, more Buddhistic or Eastern-focused presentation of spiritualism. Definitely a spiritualistic book, because the opening chapters initially discuss the possibility of connecting to one's spirit guides and the whole concept of mediumship. However, if you look at the final chapter of the Cosmic Meditation, it's a Tibetan Bonpa ritual. It's actually that we go astrally into the Tibetan temple of the Bonpa religion to a meditation exercise between the leader of the community of lamas and the members. And it gives a more exotic and I think totally different perspective, but it's still spiritualism or shamanism in an Eastern context. And that's what I wanted to achieve, is at the beginning to have the spiritualistic psychology and exercises that you might find in, say, the books of Allan Kardec, but end with something more Eastern and more universal, so that the transition from one to the other could be smooth and unbroken, showing, of course, the basic idea that meditation is one spiritual practice, and it is one, shall we say, world that we all participate in when we meditate. Now, when Folger brought out the Cosmic Meditation, one of the things that we did was to add artwork of a kind of energy to give direction and focus. And that has continued in all the books that Folger has brought out for me. Actually, the coming together of art and text is very important, but I never really had an opportunity in the Absolute Science Institute publications to connect as closely as we could later because of technology.
Well, the voodoo cartography certainly gives the text and the art very well. A lot of folks knew that you were an artist, and they saw some of your art in the Typhonian trilogies by Kenneth Grant. However, those early editions, the art was printed in black and white. So when Voodoo Cartography came out, your first full-color book, it blew a lot of people away. I remember distinctly we had a soft launch at the Seattle Esoteric Book Conference that year, and I believe I was talking with our friend Vaj Moore at the time, and when he saw it on the table, It's the only time I've seen that man speechless. He just kind of put his hand on the cover and stared at it with all of the bright and vibrant colors. Could you tell us a little bit about voodoo cartography?
Well, yes. Voodoo cartography was based on the month of August 1963, when I was in Haiti and working for the Anglican Church. I was allowed a lot of free time, and I went to various centers of voodoo religion and art, and many by what we might call just roadhouses that were decorated in Haitian art but had shrine rooms. But with my Haitian teachers, especially Dr. Jamin, now it was in a sense a diary that I kept, and what I tried to do is remember what the paintings looked like, because later, when voodoo cartography was being written, I wanted to reproduce in miniature form certain paintings that were very large. Now, in the Kenneth Grant books, the Typhonian trilogy works, where my paintings were shown, those paintings actually were from the 60s and 70s, and they appear in the ontological graffiti in color, but the first artistic experience I had of voodoo was in Haiti, when I saw these paintings that I reproduced in my own way in the voodoo cartography. It was actually a map cartography. It was a map of sacred spots or places that I visited and expounded what I was taught as voodoo theology. Now, the paintings that occur in the Typhonian trilogy, those were done for the meetings of our High Park study group in the 60s and 70s, so they're later than my experiences in Haiti in 63. Practically everything I do is rooted in some type of my experience. I mean, the attempt to represent what I had seen in colors, circumstances allowed me actually the greatest freedom to do the voodoo cartography, for the simple reason that it was at a time when I was free, but I had just gone through a tremendous medical, shall we say, voyage, and what I wanted to do was focus on the healing power of art, and voodoo art in particular. So in many ways, painting became my therapy, and my schedule was such that I had space and the choice of art materials to create and recreate these Haitian memories, and I felt it was a very wonderful experience. I still consider voodoo cartography as an exquisite work of art. I really see it as being so beautiful, and every part of it as a symbolic connective between my consciousness, my healing process, and the spirits of the Haitian deities. But it came also in a way as a surprise for me, because I didn't know that sort of art would be, shall we say, marketable in the sense of a popular publishing. I really felt at first that it might not be, but the spirits assured me, which I believe to have been an inner intuition, that all had to do is follow the imagination of art, and I'll be guided to producing a work that would be very successful. And I just trusted in the spirituality and the spiritism of the whole process. And I was very, very happy. And I was so happy that it came out. But it, in a way, it did make people speechless. They never anticipated that voodoo would be so, shall we say, rich in color dimensionality. And I, as far as I'm concerned, that was the way I saw it, you see. And I was there in Haiti for that month of August, and it was a tremendous, tremendous event in my life. In fact, it transformed my thinking on about 100 different dimensions.
Well, the paintings you mentioned in Kenneth Grant's works, our friends at Starfire Publishing took over the not only the final volumes of the trilogy, but have now been reprinting the old ones at enhanced editions, and they've managed to get those old paintings re-photographed and present them in full color, which has made more people speechless. And as you said, these will be featured heavily in Ontological Graffiti, which the pre-order was just announced in the last month here, one of the fastest-selling pre-orders in Folger's history. So certainly a lot of excitement there. But as you mentioned, it is autobiographical, and it picks up after the events in Voodoo Cartography and takes you into Chicago. So I know listeners will be very excited for any information on Ontological Graffiti that they can get. Can you give us a little preview or taste of what they are going to encounter once this book ships?
Well, first of all, let me say that I came to the Midwest and was working at the Theosophical Society for 18 months. Dr. Smith invited me to join the research department there, and at Wheaton, the Theosophical Society headquarters, everybody lived like a family. It was actually like a progressive monastery, and it was quite wonderful. But because I had been lecturing at Theosophical sites in the Pacific Northwest, I was asked by certain branches to give lectures here in the city of Chicago. So what happened is that I once gave a series of lectures on Annie Besant's connection with social work and social reform. And someone asked me if I would be considering doing work in the war on poverty, which was then being talked about because of President Johnson. And I said I would, because I did believe that theosophy could be applied, as could any spiritual movement that was valid. So eventually I took all the exams and so forth, and I was installed as a caseworker in a part of the war on poverty on the south side, on the southeast side of Chicago. Now, what is interesting is that I had regular students coming to my lectures at the Theosophical Society, and they helped me arrange my transition so that I moved into an apartment. I left Wheaton one day, and later that day, I moved into an apartment in the southeast part of Chicago. And I must thank them for that, because the transition was really very, very smooth. Not that I was had a lot of luggage or anything like that. But anyway, what was interesting is that one of the first assignments I got in my job as a caseworker was working with the Haitian refugees. So over the years, my job involved me with Haitian people, and my leisure time involved me with Haitian spirituality, which I found very, very interesting. Now, gradually, I decided to move into an apartment in Hyde Park, which would enable me to be close to work, close to my field, and also in a university environment, and from my standpoint, quite heavenly, because there were several bookstores, used bookstores around me, and of course, I was always a lover of books. In fact, maybe I would consider it one of my few addictions, but I... Once I got organized, my Haitian connections, some of my Haitian teachers had moved not to Chicago, but to the northern suburb of Evanston. So about the same time they were in the Chicago area, I had relocated, and gradually some of the Haitians that I knew moved closer to me by taking place of getting apartments and sharing quarters in the southern part of Hyde Park and the northern end of Hyde Park. And we decided then to set up some kind of a discussion group. At first, you start with a discussion group, and gradually the discussion becomes more and more what we might call structured. And gradually, because of the Haitian presence, it leads to a kind of paramasonic or Rosicrucian or voodoo Gnostic introduction to ritual work through initiation and training in a special tradition. And this gradually developed from 1966. You said I moved to Chicago in April of 1966. By August of 1966, I was organizing discussion groups in the areas where I was, and I was being helped by Mark and by Hector and a number of other individuals who gradually helped bring together a very small group, actually, nothing over 30 or anything like that. We just didn't have that many chairs. But it became a center for a voodoo initiatic society. And it was from this group that the idea, shall we say, connected to the wish that somebody wanted me to write a course on what we might call initiatic training in the occult. And this was the group from the Monastery of the Seven Rays, who connected to me through also my public lectures downtown at the Theosophical Society. So it's constantly being exposed to new opportunities to teach and to write simply by just this type of public service. Well, gradually, of course, the organization of the Voodoo Society, actually, it had a secret occult society, and it's still maintained, I might add. Courtney Willis is still the director of the Special Voodoo Society, which is different from the OTOA organization, but in a sense complementary. But anyway, that organization started holding more formalized meetings, and I kept the notes and structures, and if I didn't, I obtained copies of the structure and the procedures of those meetings on various occasions during the month, usually tied up somewhat with the phases of the moon. And that became the basis for the chapters of ontological graffiti. But that was from that period that's covered in ontological graffiti would go from 1968, when it was had developed a formalized structure, to the early 70s. Then my work after that, as the final chapter of ontological graffiti will explain, my work became involved more with Mark and I were giving seminars downtown at the hotel, and then I was writing the papers that later went into the Voodoo Gnostic workbook as lesson plans and structures for instruction in various aspects of Voodoo energy and Gnostic energy. So there was always this continuation, this continuum I was immersed in. It must be, of course, a Saturnian because it was so structured. For each year, you might say, what were you doing then, and is it in a book? Yes, I can say so. Truthfully, it is. For example, Voodoo Cartography was the 1963. In 1964, there were some papers that I wrote that were later recycled into the Voodoo Gnostic workbook. And then in 1966, I was putting together some materials that later became lesson plans for the instructions that the Hyde Park group had in 1968. So I really, at one time I would have a manila envelope for each, or a folder for each one of these lessons, you see, and it became actually a chore to just be my own archivist, you know. Now, of course, fortunately, I have archivists helping as volunteers, but every moment, it seems, or every month or year, there was some focus that I could trace in one of these books that came out, you see.
Very good. Well, that brings us to the end of part one of our interview here. So a Cult of Personality members can go to the membership section to listen to part two. In the meantime, those who are interested, we do have our Black Lotus Cult video lecture series where Michael speaks about a lot of his art that will be in Ontological Graffiti, and we display some of that as well. For those who are interested in the pre-order, it is available on Folger's website. That would be folger.co.uk. And this has been an Occult of Personality production. Occult of Personality is a podcast which peers beyond the veil of esoteric matters. Established in 2006, they've amassed an ever-growing collection of insightful interviews with practitioners, scholars, and teachers from all around the world. So we encourage you, if you have found this audio smorgasbord anywhere beyond their website, do go to occultofpersonality.net for more information. So thank you for part one, Michael. And again, members, stay tuned for part two.
In the Occult of Personality membership section, you'll find the second half of the interview with Michael Bertio, featuring some very interesting insights from a living legend. Don't miss that excellent, exclusive recording. Just go to occultofpersonality.net/membership and sign up if you haven't already. It's the best way to support the podcast while receiving access to a tremendous amount of additional exclusive content. Thanks for listening, and until next time.